Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Frank Isola with us now at the Frank Isola on Twitter. You can watch him usually on ESPN. You can read him at The Athletic. You can listen to him at SiriusXM. Frank, you're up in New York. Are you starting to get a sense that things are returning in any way to a bit of normalcy? And that might be an exaggeration. Can you feel like things are getting better? Is that a noticeable sort of feeling in the New York area right now?
You know, I think that's kind of part of our, you know, human nature to want to be optimistic. I think the weather for the past few days has been pretty good. I've actually seen more people out than before. You could tell the people are going a little stir crazy. But to your point, though, you know, even though the numbers, you know, were still bad, I think that people are feeling like, you know, for the most part, they've obeyed what the health officials want us to do. Everyone has been staying inside. There's nobody out except to go for, you know, walks and to exercise or go to the grocery store. So I do think you do kind of sense that something's changing. What that means for the rest of the country, what that means for sports, I have no idea. But you do kind of everyone's attitude seems to be a little different.
I just tweeted this out, and I think you speak to it. There's so much difference because this country is so large in terms of how the coronavirus is impacting people. New York and the New York region is completely different than a lot of the country. And this stat kind of blew my mind when I looked at the data. 28 states and the District of Columbia had 9 or fewer deaths yesterday from the coronavirus. All of those states combined a fraction, honestly, of the death total that New York itself, by itself, put out there. And I think that kind of speaks to the way that this has struck people. It's not as if it was an equal attack that impacted everybody across the country the same way. New York bore the brunt of this on an entirely different level than, frankly, anywhere else.
Yeah, and also you have people traveling. Not that people don't travel to L.A., they don't travel to D.C., but you got people from all over the world coming into New York all the time. Every time I'm in New York City, I'm on the subway. We're basically on top of one another. That has to have something to do with it. We're not as healthy in general in New York as maybe some other places. That has to be a factor because I'm kind of blown away. You know, listen, I guess in California, more people are driving. The weather is better. Maybe that has something to do with it, but it's a pretty stark contrast, New York compared to California, how few deaths they've had compared to New York.
Yeah, it is wild, especially when you consider the population and the fact that there are more people in the state of California. I've got that data in front of me right now as we speak. And it is interesting because they seem to, in California, be of the belief that things are going to take a long time to get better. But in New York, there have been 151,000 plus cases and 6,268 deaths. In California, there have been just shy of 19,000 cases and only 498 deaths. So New York yesterday had, you know, 30% more deaths just in one day than California has had throughout this entire outbreak. And obviously, it's not even just New York, you know, with the way that the New York region spirals. New Jersey has had the second most cases. Between the two of them, those two markets have had 208,000, I think, roughly, or right at 200,000 total cases. The whole country's had 434. So if you toss in Connecticut into the mix, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut have had more coronavirus cases almost than the rest of the country combined.
You know, when it first started, that's when the mayor of New York, de Blasio, who, you know, it seems like he might have been a little slow to react, but he did make a statement about, he talked about Madison Square Garden and the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. That's where the Nets play. He's like, hey, those places, they might not be open for 6 months to a year. And I started thinking, man, that sounds a little long, but you know, to be out 6 months to a year. But then now you look at it, you never know. That's how bad New York is. It does seem like the rest of the country's getting, you know, wants to get started up again. In New York, we're still trying to work our way through it.
All right, let's go into what you're hearing about the return of sports on a positive side. LeBron said and kind of went public and said, hey, it would definitely feel like it would feel strange to not finish this season. I think there are a lot of NBA players that would like to play, even if some of them have not necessarily been in the best shape, which is why you'd need three weeks or so, much like for Major League Baseball, to get everybody back into the flow of things, almost like a new training camp you would need to break in. What kind of vibe are you getting about the return of the NBA?
Well, I did listen to Adam Silver, the commissioner, the other night when he was on with Ernie Johnson. I guess they did something on NBA's Twitter account, and he still sounded somewhat optimistic. You know, he talked about the conference call that they had with the president. He did mention that, basketball wanted to be, part of the movement to start the economy again. Then I've heard from other people that the NBA might not be the first one to kind of jump into the pool. Maybe they would wait for someone else to try it. I know in Germany, that their top soccer league, which, that's basically the NFL in Germany, they have teams training now, and they're hoping to get back in mid-May, but they'll do it without fans. And it's funny, one of the last games, soccer games that was played was a Champions League game in Paris between the big team in Paris and a team in Germany, and they played without fans. I've watched plenty of soccer games before on TV without fans just because, there'd be some incident, so yeah. UEFA would ban spectators from the building. Listen, is it a little strange at first? Yeah, but you kind of get used to it. And I've heard you say this before. Most of us consume sports not by being at the games.
Totally.
When I'm watching a game, I'd rather have there be fans there. But if it means just getting the events up and going so people could watch them on TV, I think, if that's the way it has to be. And Adam Silver even said that. He did say that when we get back, the very good chance that it would start without fans, which I guess for the NBA would probably mean smaller venues, but I'm hoping, I know that the president said, hey, by September football start up again. Does that mean fans will be in there? Well, come on, you know this better than anybody. College football is as much about the fans as it is about the actual product on the field. That would really stink. But just to at least get the NBA and NHL seasons kind of, completed without fans, if that's the way it has to be, then do it.
Yeah, I said this. I mean, I watch 99.9% of the sports that I consume, which I believe is almost the case for everybody, on television. And, we kind of had a dry run on this. So props to the WrestleMania for getting this done. But I watched with my boys on Saturday and Sunday, Frank. I mean, WrestleMania. My kids absolutely love wrestling. And they had no fans present. And my kids enjoyed it just as much. And I think there is such a desire for new sports, for new programming in general, because so many people feel like they've already run through their Netflix, the queue and everything else, that there is a certain desire for there to be sports back, that I think whether or not fans are present is secondary. What about baseball? Because the talk was that baseball would potentially go to Phoenix. They need about 3 weeks to get back into shape as well. Obviously, that means if you're looking at June and July, it's time to start thinking about when you might begin that. Baseball, it feels like to me, is even easier to play without fans present than the NBA, honestly, because a lot of early season baseball games, frankly, don't have a lot of people there. So, April and May baseball, it's not uncommon for you to see these stadiums that are not very full. Before people get out and the kids get out for summer and everything else, that seems like it's a pretty easy fix.
Yeah, I like when baseball opens up and, for the most part, the stadium is packed. And then if they play the next night, or a lot of teams take off the next day, but their very next game, there's like 10,000 people in the building just because of the time of year that it is.
Yes.
There's school going on.
It's cold lots of places.
Absolutely. And it always happens, and it happened here. Where, toward the end of March, the weather was great. And now the weather, a couple of weekends ago, which would have been the first weekend for baseball, one of the games, whether it was the Mets or the Yankees that were scheduled to play in New York, the game would have been rained out.
Yeah.
And that always happens early in the season with one of those teams. But I heard the commissioner, Rob Manfred, was one of these guys that really wants to get started. I mean, think about the money that, the NBA kind of, and the NHL, they've had a season. Would
That's
they
right.
love it to be, would the NBA love it to be 82? Yeah, but, they have had a 50-game season before. They had a 66-game season before. No one talks about Tim Duncan's first championship with an asterisk on it. That was a 50-game season. LeBron's was 66. No one says that it's a tainted championship. So, you know, years from now, you will remember what this was like, but I don't think planning a champion would be a bad thing. But baseball's in a really tough spot because, you know, the Masters is going to take place as of right now. They're hoping they could play it in November. The weather in Atlanta will be fine. It's not like baseball could say, well, let's look at a December finish time unless they're going to be willing to play at neutral sites.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you just mentioned the weather. I mean, think about half the stadiums in the country, you're not going to be able to play there once you get to mid-November, certainly into December.
Yeah, I think that baseball would have to consider the idea of a neutral site World Series down in Florida or in Arizona or somewhere where they have a dome kind of venue that could protect the players in the event that it's super cold. And I think that's something that certainly has to be a part of the consideration in general. Brady, we started off the show, Frank, talking about Brady sitting down with Howard Stern for 2 hours yesterday, something that I think it's fair to say he would never have done if he were still playing with Belichick and the Patriots. In 2 hours, he probably said more honest things publicly to someone live than he has in 20 years in his career. What do you think about Brady as he moves to Tampa Bay? I started off the show by making the argument, if you told me, like, take away your favorite team, whatever your favorite team might be in the NFL for everybody out there listening. If you told me to pick the next NFL team that I would most like to watch all 16 games of, it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it's not even close. And I don't know that I've ever wanted to watch 16 Tampa Bay Buccaneer games in the last 20 years. Otherwise, it's amazing how much of a pull Brady has on me, and I think on much of the American public as well.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, he's a fascinating person just from this standpoint, his lifestyle. I mean, he married a supermodel. He had dated an actress before that, and had a child with the actress, Bridget Monaghan. And then he talked about, he mentioned that in the Howard Stern interview. Clearly, he knew who Howard Stern was. He even mentioned how he liked the movie, what was Howard's?
Private Parts.
Whatever, Private Parts. He mentioned that. And he was cursing during the interview, so
yeah.
He obviously knew his audience, so to speak. I thought he handled himself really well. And when he explains it, I know like some people, I didn't provide that much. But I think when he kind of talks about the Patriots, and I think he wants it to be a clean break, even though these things never are really that clean. But everything that had been reported, I had heard the same thing. That he just got kind of tired of that way. And you can understand that. He comes in as a young guy. He's in his early 20s. He's 43 years old. I'm sure at this point he's tired of being treated by Bill Belichick like he's a 25-year-old kid, but that's the way that Bill Belichick does stuff. So he wants to try something different. I do think it'll be fascinating because it's not like he went to kind of a ready-made franchise. It's not like he went to the Cowboys with the big name and they have all these weapons and you think, hey, with the right quarterback, maybe they could make some kind of crazy run. It seems like he's really rolling the dice here with Tampa Bay. I mean, look over the history. What the last 40 years, what really has Tampa Bay done? I know they've won a Super Bowl, but for the most part, hasn't been the best organization. There's been a lot of turnover. I think that's what kind of makes it fascinating as well. I mean, if he were to make the playoffs and even make it to, say, the NFC Championship game, I think that'd be a nice little feather in his cap. Whether or not he can do that, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, look, I think one of the top storylines is going to be who wins more games, Patriots without Brady or the Bucs with Brady. And you can't tell me that Belichick and Brady aren't going to be kind of looking over their shoulder at how the other guy is doing all season long. They may say that they don't do it, but those two guys are way too competitive not to want to be the winner in the who was the most important part of the Patriot dynasty, Brady or Belichick, a debate that sports fans will be having for decades to come.
But Clay, don't you think too? It's amazing how people see. I like Bill Belichick. I just like the way that he's. I like the way the Patriots play. I get it in the press conferences. To me, it's a bit of an act. But I think because he's like that with the media, people conveniently forget. You know, the year that Brady went down, they did go 11-5 with Matt Castle.
Totally true. And he went 3-1 without Brady during the suspension for Deflategate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the guy kind of knows what he's doing.
Yeah, but this will be the ultimate test. I mean, if he came out and he went 11-5 with Jared Stidham and the let's say the Bucs came out and they fell flat on their face and went 6-10, I mean, a lot of people would say, wow, this is all about Belichick, not Brady, right? I mean, that's the consensus. And I think Brady knows that. I think Belichick knows that. And ultimately, while Brady may say he doesn't care about his legacy, legacy is often a function of ego. And I think Brady has a pretty big ego because of his success. And I think Belichick does too. And that's why I think this this battle between the two of them for really the ultimate question of who was more important, right? The answer may well be that neither could have done it without the other. But ultimately, that's going to be the question. What does Belichick have left? Can he win a Super Bowl without Brady? And can Brady make a legitimate playoff run and or make it to a Super Bowl without Belichick? Those are two things that I certainly would love to see. And we're going to start to get our answer in the fall.
Yeah, and I think Tom Brady kind of said exactly what you're saying. And, you know, they were good for each other. I always thought that Brady later on in his career, certainly the last 2 years, you know, I think football players, and especially, you know, we're talking about a guy in his 40s. I think these guys, after a while, they don't want to get hit. So when you watch him play, he gives up on plays a lot sooner than he would maybe 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago. And I think that's part of being smarter, but it just seems like the way the league is now with these quarterbacks that can extend plays. It's like when you go play basketball with your kids, you'll see as they get into their teens, they're more athletic than you, but you have so much more knowledge from playing over the years that you're smarter than them. I see when I go play with like these younger guys, they're in theory better than me, but it's amazing how like dumb they are. A lot of younger kids. I'm sure Brady sees the same thing. Athletically, he can't compete. And that's why he gives up on plays. I always think football players, and not just quarterbacks, I think Michael Strahan got like this too later on in his career. Deion was like this. They just don't want to get hit. They might like the sport, but they try to minimize how many times they get hit. And it's kind of like the one sport that you play where it's almost impossible to do that.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys know after a couple of years, hey, I only have so many hits in my body. And I remember watching that when I was a kid. Wide receivers, you see, do it all the time. And it's different even than in the 80s when I was watching early NFL. You see a guy going over the middle, it was like a point of pride that he wasn't going to go down.
Yep.
You know, now what do you see happen every time a receiver goes over the middle? He goes ahead and gets down. You know, like, you know you've got your yards. Why give the safety a big hit on you? You know, it's different if you're trying to fight for that extra yard for a first down. But if you got 15 yards and it's first and 10, go ahead and take that dive, you know, get touchdown as opposed to letting somebody give you the big shot.
This is before you, Clay, but Jim Brown used to give Franco Harris a hard time about that. Because
yeah.
Franco Harris used to run out of bounds. I'm pretty sure Barry Sanders used to do that too.
Yeah.
Where he'd run out of bounds. And I heard, as a high school football player, I heard LeBron used to do that when he was young, that he would run out of bounds. Instead of why am I going to take the extra hit? First of all, you take the extra hit, you could fumble the ball, plus you're taking extra hits. I know it's not in the spirit of football, but sometimes like giving up on a play like that, it might be smart for your team and certainly for you.
Discretion is the better form of valor would be one phrase, and also you want to win the war, not the battle. Good stuff as
Absolutely.
Always, Frank Isola. We'll talk to you next week, my man.
All right, Clay, take care.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
And I'm really happy with all the work that we're doing. And especially right now with the amount of, you're probably seeing across the country, governors and prosecutors are deciding to let certain low-level nonviolent criminals out of jail for a lot of reasons, which we can get into. And they're hopefully able to come through places like Life Learning Center. I'm hopeful that with all this stimulus money that's being given out, right, $2.2 trillion that's getting dished out all the time, I'm hoping that at some point some of this money is going to go towards treatment, towards wraparound services, because these people are getting out, they're back in our community, and Clay, they're not going anywhere, right? There's no island that they're going to go to and just go live. They're going to go to the same grocery stores you and I go to and all that. We need to make sure they're the best version of themselves. That's what we're doing down there at Life Learning Center, and I hopefully – again, more places like this will pop up across the country.
No, it's good work because I, you know, in a prior life before I sat down and started doing radio and writing about sports and whatnot, was an attorney, and I was involved in representing criminal defendants. And what you learn very quickly is we have this idea, particularly if you're fortunate enough not to have to deal with the criminal justice system, that there is a huge line of demarcation between someone who has been charged with a crime and a person who has not. And what I'm sure you have seen and what certainly I have seen is a lot of times people make a really bad choice and then they have their worst choice ever that is then becomes a crime, and they are not bad people, right? They make bad choices,
right.
But there's a difference between people who make bad choices and bad people, and oftentimes rehabilitation is very difficult for somebody when they have something on their criminal record, and it's easy, I think, to just kind of cast that person to the side and not pay attention to them, and I appreciate people like you who are doing work to try and legitimately rehabilitate. But people forget, the purpose of prison is to rehabilitate prisoners so that when they are
correct.
Leaving prison, they are able to be functional members of society. And oftentimes I feel like we want to tie them up, lock them up, throw away the key, and that's not really an effective or efficient manner in which to handle crime in society, particularly nonviolent crime, which is a huge percentage of the people that end up in prisons across this country.
No, you're certainly right. And there's some stat out there. I believe it's one-third of prisoners when they're let out, okay, they've done their time, they've done their sentence, they're let out. Within 30 days, one-third of them find themselves back in the criminal justice system because there's no support group, there's no place like Life Learning Center that gives them a place to go, and we feed them, and we teach them, and we, you know, any whatever you need, whatever resource you need will get you connected with the right person that needs to happen. And again, we're going to have a real crisis on our hands. I'm sure you see, obviously, there's no meeting, you know, no, we're doing social distancing right now, right? There's no meetings that are being held. All those folks that are in
It's a huge deal for people who are in 12-step
right.
programs, Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever they are in to try to deal with issues of addiction that have been debilitating in their life. Many of those, I mean, I know some of them are happening technologically, but as you know, being able to be present with other people is oftentimes much more impactful. There are a lot of people struggling with these aspects and these addictions all over the country, which could lead to further crime because there's such a connection between addiction and crime in this country.
It's the root. I mean, it's the root of a lot of the crime that's going on out there. So certainly those services need to be addressed. They need to have more facilities. And again, a lot of the stimulus money that's being thrown around out there, hopefully will, and I'm hopefully trying to help bring awareness that some of that needs to go to these types of services rather than just, okay, we'll throw money out there, but give it to the treatment so that bridge can be built from incarceration to getting back into society and doing good things.
You're in Cincinnati. I want to get your opinion on a couple of major sports stories that involve Cincinnati. What's your expectation level for Joe Burrow season one with the Bengals? I'm assuming you 100% believe the Bengals are going to take him and that there's not going to be any drama there. If Burrow's with the Bengals, what does it look like in year one?
I got to tell you this, Clay. So, I mean, as you well know, sports in Cincinnati have not been kind over the last 20, 25 years, right?
Yes.
The last playoff win, I think, was the Cincinnati Reds in 1995. Okay.
So I grew up a huge Reds fan. So the 1990 Reds title is one of my favorite moments as a sports fan. But you're right. I know Cincinnati sports pretty well, not that far away down in Nashville. So what is the odd level of optimism about Joe Burrow?
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying is it's usually off seasons are kind of like, okay, the Bengals never do anything in free agency. Here we go again kind of thing. But I've never felt and heard from people this level of excitement in January, February, March than I have ever, you know, and it's because of Joe Burrow. I mean, people are really invigorated by this guy and hopes he can turn around this franchise and give a new leader. I think people like the fact that he's from Ohio, right? He's an Ohio
yeah.
guy. He's from Athens. I think that's very important. But no, I think he's really got this town buzzing and giving people a lot of hope. I think they need to get that from just a business standpoint too. I mean, our attendance here in Cincinnati for the past three seasons was last in the NFL. So the organization needs a spark, and I think that spark is going to be Joe Burrow, and a lot of folks are excited about him.
Okay, Cincinnati Reds, you mentioned it earlier. I grew up a Reds fan. The city of Cincinnati, opening day, Major League Baseball, a lot of pomp, circumstance, pageantry there every year, even though, as you mentioned, there hasn't been a lot of reason for optimism over the past decades even of Reds baseball. What is Cincinnati like in April without baseball?
It's tough because, I mean, this is a Reds town. I deal with it on radio, and here in town we got the Cincinnati Bearcats, we got Xavier basketball. Ohio State is 2 hours north, but what people want to talk about when I do radio in this town is Cincinnati Reds far and away number one, then Bengals, and then everything else. And right now people are particularly excited about the Reds because the management just went out and spent $140 million in free agency. We've got a bunch of key players that everyone's really excited about. And I was like, okay, here's our season. I think Dick Williams, the GM, has done a great job, you know, kind of trimming the fat and developing the roster and drafting, and boom, now we go out and get the free agents and we're going to make a run. Here's our year. And we can't play baseball, so it's kind of a frustrating kind of culmination here for Reds fans. But hopefully they'll figure out somehow, some way. I know they're floating the idea of maybe playing out in Arizona. I'll take it. I'll take whatever we can get. Let's get baseball going and give people something to watch here.
Rocky Boyman, I appreciate the time, my man. Fantastic to talk with you. Tell people how they can help out with the charity that you're involved with in Covington. Is there a website? Is there a location?
Yeah, just go to lifelearningcenter.us. You can find out a little bit more about it there, just exactly what we do. Obviously, we're in need of, you know, resources, especially, you know, socks, underwear, clothes, you know, things like that. But you can go on the website there, lifelearningcenter.us. Check it out and spread the word. And Clay, I really appreciate having me on to talk about this.
Hey, my man, I appreciate it. It's Rocky Boyman, former NFL player. He is at 700 WLW, which is a monster station, I believe, in the Cincinnati area where he's been doing sports talk radio. A lot of excitement in Cincinnati to see what's going to happen 2 weeks from today, in theory, when they walk up and make the announcement. I guess walk up is the different thing. I guess they zoom in, however we're going to do it, with the NFL draft taking place technologically, a little bit different in 2 weeks. By the way, props to the NFL. Speaking of good deeds, they're going to do a three-day fundraising charity event surrounding coronavirus relief, which is massively important. I believe, I don't know if they've come out yet, we're going to get the unemployment numbers for a third straight week. Already 10 million people have lost their jobs. Expectation is another 6 million or so people are going to lose their jobs over our response to the coronavirus shutting down the country. That news is going to come out today. I know a lot of you out there listening to me right now are struggling financially. I really believe that there is a very good chance that by the end of April, things are going to start to turn and we're going to be back to being on a roll like this country was economically before the coronavirus arrived on our shores. Let me bring in Eddie Garcia. Go ahead and get an update. Somebody else charged with a double murder for hire plot? Anything else that's out there that I need to be aware of?
No, not at this moment.
We have to put new protocols in place where if something crazy is being said in the update and we aren't talking about it, you have to come on and just be like, hey, guys, did you notice that I just talked about a double murder for hire when you were trying to make sure that you're getting your ad reads right?
Isn't this a lesson to you all that you should always listen to me?
We can't listen. We got to be getting the show ready. You got to tell us if what you're saying is something that we're not discussing.
Got to listen to me. And of course, we'll start with Tom Brady because he's Tom Brady.
How are you starting with Tom Brady when there's a double murder for hire involving one of the most famous NFL running backs of all time?
Well, I don't know. I think that's pushing it a little bit. He hasn't been charged yet.
If we came out and somebody accused me of being involved in a double murder for hire plot, would you be like, hey, it's a little bit to talk about Clay Travis being involved? If there are court documents saying that I was hiring people to get, we talked about the murder for hire of Joe Exotic on this show, and he got 22 years in prison, and nobody even died. And now Chris Johnson's accused of paying for two people to be murdered. It's a lead story. It's more important than Brady talking to Howard Stern.
Okay. Then let's start with that.
Yeah, let's start with that. Why don't we?
TMZ reporting that former star running back Chris Johnson is being accused in court documents of funding a murder-for-hire shooting of 2 to 10 years. Now back to Clay Travis and the Geico Outkick the Coverage studios.
So you said Tom Brady talked to Howard Stern. He didn't really say anything. Like, that is your lead story over Chris Johnson double murder-for-hire?
Yes.
Yeah. This is a fundamental breakdown in the way that the show's updates take place. When there's a major update that people are hearing and it's like a record scratch moment and everybody's like, wait a minute, did he say Chris Johnson double murder for hire? And then we're like, well, Tom Brady said that, Giselle sometimes gets mad at him. I think we probably should have been leading with Chris Johnson. When we come back, all the big stories we're hitting, Nick Saban got email. Really?
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
no limitations now apply either to Nick Saban when it comes to his ability to use email and also text. Saban told ESPN he's never had an email address, and he had to get one because of the social isolation. Here is Saban yesterday talking about his email address.
One positive of this for me is I even have an email now. So, I've come a long way. It was hard to communicate when you have to be by yourself and you always depend on somebody else to get your emails and messages and all that. And it just didn't work. And they were sending them all to Miss Terry. She fired me. And she said, I'm not dealing with your stuff anymore. So I had to do it on my own.
Coach, last time I checked, you like weren't even doing text messages, really.
No, I'm like, call me is like, you know, that's about as far as it goes on the text part of it. But, you know, I can actually get an email now and read what somebody, I've really come a long way.
Nick Saban, I remember, so I go every year, although it's been canceled this year. The SEC spring meetings are down in Destin, Florida, Sandestin to be exact, at a hotel. They bring in all the college football coaches, all the college basketball coaches, and discuss all the league-related issues. And I always remember being impressed and also thinking it was kind of wild considering what a good recruiter he is. Nick Saban has a flip phone. So all these younger coaches, like I played golf last year. You guys may remember at the Regions Challenge down in Birmingham, and Kirby Smart and I were teamed up together. So we were in a golf cart for 5 hours, 6 hours, whatever, together. And I was talking with Kirby about how often you have to be recruiting, texting recruits and all the obligations and responsibilities associated with that. And Nick Saban's got all his assistants doing it. You know, he'll talk to recruits on the phone, but he's not sitting around texting 16 and 17-year-olds all day, which actually makes sense because I can't imagine being an older guy and having to do that for a living. So Saban will talk to him on the phone. Hey, you want to have an actual phone conversation? Saban will have a phone conversation with a recruit. And obviously, he's selling a product that's pretty good in that huge percentages of Alabama football players go on to play at the professional level. Obviously, you win a lot of football games if you're an Alabama Crimson Tide member. But to not even have a phone that's capable of texting, I always thought was pretty wild. And Saban basically confirming that he doesn't text and also that he just got an email address is pretty fantastic there. By the way, special. We haven't done an Animal Thunderdome all week. I think you got a couple of them lined up for us, Danny G. Let's go ahead and cue the music.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I have a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Ma'am, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
What's the latest?
I'm sure you...
By the way, that open, yeah. If you just... I'm trying to listen to things that we actually put on the air. That open is still pretty outstanding. Since Eddie didn't tell us about the double murder, I'm trying to make sure I'm not missing anything in the Animal Thunderdome.
You're actually listening to our show closely now.
Yes. Yeah, paying
attention. This is awesome. All right. So you probably saw this tweeted into us a lot. A tiger at the Bronx Zoo tested positive for the coronavirus. The first believed U.S. animal case. A 4-year-old Malayan tiger named Nadia was confirmed to have contracted COVID-19 by the USDA's National Veterinary Services
Here's
Laboratory.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
Why were they testing the tiger for coronavirus?
Well, they say because they had developed, her and her sister had developed coughs and were looking very tired. And so they thought something was up. And
right,
there was
but there are lots of humans that want to get coronavirus testing that haven't been tested. And so,
yes.
Like, who was like, you know, maybe the tiger got the coronavirus?
Well, here's the reason why. A staff member working at the Bronx Zoo was diagnosed with the coronavirus.
Oh, so the person gave it to the tiger.
Yes. Okay. And at first, we were told this probably couldn't happen, that they didn't think humans could transmit it to animals. That's not the case now.
Well, I don't know if we'll bring this up with the Surgeon General. We have a limited number of questions that we can ask. I don't know if we should bring up the tiger getting the coronavirus. By the way, the Surgeon General is going to be on about an hour from now. with the show live. All right, so that is an intriguing. Yes, we got blown up with that story.
Yeah, and by the way, Nadia is expected to recover.
Make a full recovery.
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
All right. Animal rescuers in Britain say a man who brought a stray puppy home from a construction site discovered that it was actually a fox cub.
Oh, wow.
The RSPCA said this worker found this baby animal at the building site there in Merseyside, Britain, and took it home, where he realized later from a neighbor that it was a fox cub, not a domestic dog.
How much later?
It doesn't say. It doesn't give a timeline. But
can you raise a fox? Like, would that work if you got it at cub status?
Man, I'm going to tweet out the photo of this fox cub. I will tag you at Clay Travis, at Danny G Radio on Twitter. How this guy could look at this thing and not know that it wasn't a puppy dog, I have no idea. But the article says that this worker on the building site came across what he thought was an abandoned puppy. He saw no mother around, so he took it home. But when a neighbor told him it was not a pup, but actually a fox cub, he rightly called the RSPCA. Cub, which appears to be under a month old, is now in the care of vets and will later be taken to the RSPCA's Stapley Grange Wildlife Center.
Oh, good for him. That's a positive story, at least.
Yeah, they'll eventually return this fox to the wild.
By the way, I got blown up from people making suggestions about cats. Remember yesterday we were talking about my family? The fact that they're all allied against me trying to argue that we need to get a cat for the house, and I'm fundamentally opposed to it because I've got allergies. But the number of people who sent me, I appreciate it, slid into my DMs to send me reports about the tiger cats or whatever those things are called, and also the Russian blue eye cats that are supposedly hypoallergenic. Yep. And then also a bunch of allergists wrote in, and they're like, no, there's no such thing as a hypoallergenic animal. If you have allergies, you're still going to have an issue.
There's just Debbie Downers.
No, I don't want a cat. I'm gonna stay.
You're looking for every
this.
Way possible to get out of it.
My wife said on our 15th wedding anniversary, we went out to dinner, and she told me, when you die, I'm gonna get a cat. So if CJ2K, if I die, I want there to be an investigation into whether my wife might be behind it, and certainly there's gonna suddenly be a ton of cats that show up in my house.
Speaking of family pets, I'll give you the story when we come back at the top of hour three. I hope if you guys do get a cat that you treat your pet better than this family in Rochester did with their dog.
That sounds awful. That's an awful tease. We're going to have an animal abuse story.
It was an accident. No, it was an accident.
All right.
But
we have one more part of the Animal Thunderdome left for you. What do you got for me, Danny G?
All right, Clay. This is very National Lampoon's Vacation. Firefighters in New York State say a dog was unfortunately taken on a 40-mile drive by his owner, trapped underneath the vehicle. The Rochester Fire Department say that firefighters and the Humane Society rescuers responded when the owner of this 2-year-old beagle, Zeke, was called, and they reported that the canine was trapped under their vehicle. They say that Zeke must have gotten stuck under their car before it was driven at least 40 miles. The rescuers enlisted help from staff members at Lollipop Farm, including a vet who was able to sedate Zeke and safely extracted him from underneath the vehicle. Firefighters there on the scene say that Zeke is being treated for some pretty bad injuries, but he's expected to recover.
That's better than in vacation.
Yeah, that was a bad outcome.
Yeah, bad outcome there.
Yeah, if you don't know the Chevy Chase 1983 movie.
Yeah. Dog wasn't able to keep up.
Yeah, where they didn't you take your family to see that movie?
I did. We went to see Christmas Vacation.
Oh, okay. Same series.
My family had never seen Christmas Vacation. They brought it back to theaters. I think it was the 30-year anniversary for Christmas Vacation, 25-year anniversary, whatever the heck it was. I took my 12, 9, and 5-year-old. They absolutely loved it. Right before Christmas.
Yeah, spoiler alert, in that movie they accidentally dragged their grandmother's dog behind the station wagon.
And also put the grandmother on the top of the car and drove with her dead body. So, yeah, lots of good stories there. Good news for Zeke. He did survive.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
The nation's Surgeon General Jerome Adams joins us now. I know how busy you are, Dr. Adams. Appreciate you joining us here on Outkick. What has your day-to-day life been like for the last month. I mean, how many hours a night of sleep are you getting just from a personal perspective? You guys are working all the time.
Well, I hate to say this as the Surgeon General of the United States, but I am not my living my best life right now in terms of getting enough sleep. I'm still trying to eat right, really focusing on getting the veggies in whenever I can. And I make a spinach and apple smoothie every morning. And I'm still trying to exercise. And even with social distancing, you still can get in exercise. Actually, it's a great time to do a 30-day challenge, to do a push-up challenge or a air squat challenge or a plank challenge, so that at the end of this, you aren't just looking at all you missed out on. You can say, man, I've got a six pack at the end of these 30 days, or you know, my chest, my pecs, and my biceps are looking pretty good because I've been doing more working out at home. So could be some positive that comes out of this for some people if you just look at it the right way.
How many push-ups can you do in a row?
72 was my record.
70. And when did you do 72?
Well, actually, the Surgeon General is the head of the Public Health Service Commission Corps, and so we have to do an annual physical fitness test. So we have to run 1.5 miles. We've got to do a maximum number of push-ups in 2 minutes, and then we've got to do up to a 3-minute plank. And so I got a perfect score on my last one. But that was just a few months ago when I did that. And it's still nowhere near Herschel Walker, who's one of my buddies on the presidential test. But he does an insane amount of push-ups, even at his age, every single day.
Yeah, the Herschel Walker workout was, back in the day, if I'm not mistaken, he said he would do 1,000 push-ups and 1,000 sit-ups every day.
And he still keeps to that. I think he takes a few days off, but still most days of the week he's still doing that. I mean, I stand next to him when we're at the Presidential Task Force on Physical Fitness, and oh my gosh, he looks like he could go out on the football field right now.
No, there's no doubt at all about that. Well, first, thanks for all the work that you have been doing along with many other people on in the White House and around the country. I want to hit you with a few questions here because obviously we've got a big audience of people that are very excited to hear from you. I saw Dr. Fauci said, and I thought this was amazing, we should never shake hands again. Would you go that far? Do you think that one of the legacies of the coronavirus is going to be there really isn't a reason to continue to shake hands in our society?
Well, I think one of the things that's going to come from this is there's going to be a lot more attention to hand hygiene and to social distancing, and that's not a bad thing. We have 25,000 people who've died in this country this season from the flu. And we know that if people were more attentive to hand washing, to staying at home when they were sick, and to really doing the things that we're telling people to do for coronavirus, you'd see less people die from the flu. Here's what I mean. I'm a hugger. Unfortunately, I grew up in the South, and you know, you give everyone a kiss on the cheek and you hug, and so. At the end of the day, I think people are still going to do it, but they're going to be a lot more attentive to making sure they're washing their hands and that they're not doing it if they're sick and they're staying away from people who are sick.
Do you think that weather is having an impact on the coronavirus? There's been a lot of uncertainty about, I know I've heard Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci in these press conferences, as well as yourself, discussing that this is a new virus, so we don't know for sure. But if you look at the spread of the virus, it seems like warmer climates in general have not had the same level of outbreak. I know New Orleans did, and that might be a little bit associated with Mardi Gras, but by and large, it has been a colder weather climate, both in Europe and also in the United States so far. Southern California, Texas, Florida in general have not seen anywhere near the same outbreaks that we've seen elsewhere. Is the weather likely to help us as it warms up across the country?
That is a great question. Important to know that, number one, some viruses are sensitive to temperature and humidity. And as you've heard Dr. Birx and Fauci and myself say, we still don't know if this virus is going to be sensitive to heat and humidity. But we do know that viruses tend to tail off when it gets warmer out because people are naturally social distancing. If you're outside, you're not going to be packed in a house with 5, 10, 12 people. And so you're naturally staying further apart. And so that could play a role here. But important to know that no matter if this virus is sensitive to heat and humidity, that doesn't cancel out bad behavior. And so we've seen in New Orleans when people were packed together for Mardi Gras, that the heat didn't help. We're seeing L.A. as a city that's seeing an increased number of cases, even though it's warm there. When people are packed together, that's how this virus thrives and spreads. It spreads person to person. The way we defeat it, our defense against this virus, is by separating people any way we can. And we can't just rely on the weather to do its job. We've all got to do our part. And I don't mean to be doom and gloom. America is doing their part, and you're actually hearing on the news today that the projections are improving, and it's largely because Americans, 90-plus percent of America is staying at home. They're doing the right things, and the more they do it and the more quickly we do it, the more quickly we will be over this and we'll get back to some sense of normalcy.
We're talking to the nation's Surgeon General, Jerome Adams. Do you believe that we have peaked or we will peak in terms of death and total new cases this week? Is that your expectation?
Well, important to know that everyone is on a different curve. And so, yes, there are some places that will peak this week. We predict New York, New Jersey will have their peak this week, perhaps even New Orleans. But we know that L.A., Indianapolis, Miami, Detroit, they're just going up. And so it's all the more important that people across the country really pay attention to these guidelines for the next 30 days and do all that they can. Also remember that when you hit your peak, that doesn't mean you're over. That just means that that's the worst day you're going to have, but you're still going to have bad days after that as you start to tail down. So again, important that people avoid large gatherings, that they avoid non-essential travel, if they only go out if they absolutely have to. And if you do have to go out and you can't maintain 6 feet of distance, then please consider wearing a cloth facial covering because it protects other people in case you happen to be someone who has COVID and doesn't know it yet.
If you were on a call right now, and you may have been on a call with the commissioners of the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, and they were saying to you, Dr. Adams, what should we be doing right now to try to prepare for a future where we're able to play in June, July, maybe even late May, what would you tell them to do?
Well, the first thing I would tell them to do is to use every tool that they have to get their players and their fans to engage in social distancing. And a shout-out to C.J. McCollum, a shout-out to the Washington Nationals and Jose Andreas, a shout-out to Jim Irsay, who's a friend of mine who I text back and forth with, who've all used their platforms to encourage people to stay at home, because we can't reopen if we still have wide community spread of COVID-19 across the nation. But be thinking about what you can do within your facilities to facilitate social distancing, to make sure there's hand sanitizer around so people can practice good hygiene. And when we reopen, it's likely going to be without fans initially, and then with very few fans so that we can social distance. But again, for the sake of our players, we can't reopen and have them next to each other if we still have wide community spread. I want people to know that we're getting more testing available out there. We're over 2 million tests now, and that's going to be a key. We also want people to know that there are communities in this country that have been doing a fair amount of testing and have low levels. So I'm optimistic that we will start to reopen the economy sooner rather than later, but it's really important this next 30 days that we all do our part so that we can get to the end of this more quickly.
I looked at the data that came out, and I'm kind of fascinated by this. You talked about different places having different curves. What I saw yesterday was 28 states and Washington, D.C. had 9 or fewer deaths. Now, obviously, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut are on a different scale than this. But that reflects that maybe this one-size-fits-all policy, the mayors, the governors, when we move into May, things are going to start to get a little bit different perhaps because the nation is huge and everybody isn't experiencing this in the same way.
You're exactly right there. And when we do reopen, there will be places that have hit their peak and they're coming down, and they've been, and they will reopen sooner than places that haven't hit their peak yet. But we don't want people to fall asleep on this. We don't want them to feel like they can't this can't happen to them. We saw this happen actually, and this is important, in the African American community. Initially, people didn't think that African Americans were as susceptible because this started in China. Not a lot of black people. Then it went to Europe. Not as many black people. Then it started in the United States in Seattle. Again, not as many black people as some of our other urban centers. But then it hit New York, New Jersey, Chicago. And we're now seeing that African Americans are dying disproportionately from this. And I think it's important to talk about this on a sports network because basketball, football, even baseball, we know a lot of these sports have athletes who are from minority populations, and we need them to help us get the word out that if you are in a minority population, you unfortunately have a higher risk of chronic disease, of diabetes, of heart disease, of lung disease, and those are the very risk factors that put you at risk for COVID-19. We also need to understand that in these communities, many people are living in multi-generational households. They're working in jobs that don't allow you to telework. And so they may be at more risk, not just for complications of COVID-19, but of being exposed to it at work or at home or in the communities they live in. So I'm really asking more of the athletes out there to help the communities understand they are at risk for COVID-19, they are at risk for bringing it home to their loved ones, and they have the power to help stop the spread of this and get our economy back open again and our sports leagues back open again sooner.
Nation Surgeon General Jerome Adams, well said there. You mentioned that you're friends with Jim Irsay. I believe you're from Indiana, or went to med school at Indiana, I should say. Spent time there. I think you grew up in Maryland, if I'm not mistaken. Do you expect that football will be played this fall? That's the number one question I bet most sports fans listening to us right now have. Will football, in your opinion, be back?
That is a great question, and the most honest answer I can give you is I don't know, but I think football is going to be the hardest sport to bring back because it is the sport where you have the largest number of people on a field rubbing up against each other at the same time. And so it is literally a dream scenario for a disease that spreads person to person. And it's not just about the fans. We want to make sure we can protect the players. And I may have oversold it. I do text back and forth with Jim Irsay, but I'm a season ticket holder for the Colts, so basically I give him my money every year.
I'm a season ticket holder for the Titans, so I know that feeling. Last question for you, Dr. Adams. I appreciate you being on with us. Should we think about the Jordan flu game differently now than we did 20 years ago when Jordan was believed and beloved as an iconic figure because he played with the flu? Now, in light of the coronavirus, do we have to experience that differently?
You know what? That is a fantastic question, and it's one that I hadn't thought about. But as I mentioned, we aren't going to go back to normal as in the way things were before. There's going to be a new normal going forward, and sports has always had to adapt. They've adapted to the fact that again, we now know that people have HIV, they're living with HIV, and we know that they're adapting to other diseases that are commonly occurring in the public, and we're going to have to adapt to the fact that coronavirus is here, and we don't want someone who is sick with the flu or with coronavirus toughing it out and going out there and playing in a game and then contaminating everyone else on the court. And so I do think we're going to have to not necessarily look at that game differently, but moving forward, think about, hey, how do we all do our part to protect each other on the court or on the field? And how do we do our part to be good role models for the people out in public who quite frankly, are at risk if they try to pull a Jordan and go to work while they're sick?
Great stuff, Dr. Adams from the Surgeon General's office. This has been Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.